Case number 07-7156 et al. Bridget Feimster et al. Versus BSA Limited Partnership Appellant. Mr. Greenberg for the appellants, Ms. Becker for the appellees.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, I've reserved 5 minutes. I neither have ripple effects nor joys to quote to the Court this morning, I'm afraid, merely a tautology created by Judge Walton's ruling below on the question of whether the phrase offered for rental is satisfied under 11.3b of the HUD policy guide, so that a tenant who is in a unit covered by a Section 8 voucher may continue to rent it and force the landlord under local law to issue a one-year lease against its wishes when it is seeking to leave the rental housing market and retire. It's our position, as we set out in the brief, that offered for rental means something more than the incumbent occupancy of the Section 8 tenant. It requires both an objective and a subjective forward-looking analysis. The facts in our case are undisputed. 27 of the 37 units were vacant at the time this case arose. BSA was not seeking tenants. It had never placed any ads for tenants. It had never engaged a leasing broker to seek tenants.
But you were willing to take cash until the District of Columbia courts resolved the issue, right?
No, actually, I believe, Your Honor, that phrase appeared in my colleague's brief, but I believe the record belies that position at 588. I believe there is a stipulation in the record at 588. Paragraph 1.
What is 588?
I'm sorry. Paragraph 1 of the stipulation, Your Honor, which you will find in the record appendix at 588. I'll read it if you wish. It says, we will not evict any tenant for nonpayment of rent during the pendency of the case. The cash is the non-voucher portion. Not every voucher tenant gets 100% payment. Some get 70, 80. It's all income-based. So it is somewhat misleading the way it was presented in the brief.
Did you take cash during the period in which these remained subject to the decision in the Superior Court?
To the extent that they were not covered by voucher payments.
Right, right.
Yes.
Well, so isn't that offering it for rental during that period?
No, that's an incumbent tenant paying fair value for continuing to occupy. That's not offering for rent. Remember,
You weren't giving it away.
No.
You weren't saying they could live there for free.
No, and I don't think there's anything that requires it.
You were asking for payment.
No, we were asking for fair compensation for the forced use of the premises. Had we filed an eviction case, Your Honor, I would have gotten a protective order that would have required the money go into the registry. But this is the non-voucher portion. It would be a very different case.
Imagine the rule in the District of Columbia were that during this period they had a month-to-month lease.
Okay.
Would that be, even though you didn't want that,
right,
that until the issue in this District of Columbia were resolved, they had a month-to-month lease. Would that be offered for rental?
Not if it was imposed on me involuntarily.
Even if it was imposed on you by the law of the District of Columbia?
That's my position, if I could answer it this way, my position is that Congress did not intend to couple every local law to this nationwide housing policy. The policy of HUD, as they interpret the National Housing Act, is to allow landlords to cease being Section 8 landlords. What Ginty said was you can't discriminate between Section 8 tenants because you don't like them. We did not discriminate. We said we want out. We want to leave the rental housing market. The District of Columbia, whether you agree with it or not, erects certain barriers to that exit. My position is that I should not be forced to take Section 8 vouchers because I'm required to sign a one-year lease in order to do that by district regulation and HUD regulation.
But let's go back. You talked about Congress. Congress says the assisted family may elect to remain in the same project in the family was residing on the date of the eligibility event for the project.
Yes,
so Congress has said that the recipients get a right to stay there.
It says may. It doesn't say shall. It doesn't say they shall have the right to force the landlord. It says may.
Assisted family may elect to remain if they want to stay.
If they want to stay, and there's a unit that is being offered for rent. That's the key. What does offer for rent mean? I take the position, I did below, Judge Walton rejected it, that when you offer something, it means you're holding it out to the public. In simple contract terms, I offer to rent you a unit.
Where's the language offer to rent in the statute I was just looking at? Looking at 1437 FT1B.
Actually, the phrase comes from Section 11.3B in the HUD guidelines.
And what
which
significance?
Is HUD's I'm talking interpretation about the of that statute.
Which, under Christensen, I mean, it's, you know, doesn't mean anything necessarily. I'm looking at the language of the statute. It seems to give the tenant, the family who's been receiving Section 8 voucher, and now gets the enhanced voucher for precisely the circumstance we're talking about here. They may elect to remain.
Yes. If there is a project-wide contract and there's another unit, they can remain. If it's no longer a project-wide contract, Your Honor.
I don't see that language in here.
I understand. If it's not a project-wide and they get the individual sticky voucher.
I don't see the language in there. Where is it coming from?
Well, I indicated it came from 11.3B. That's how HUD interprets the statute. Because the contrary result, the result that Your Honor seems to be leaning toward, is the landlord is forced to take the Section 8 voucher, even if they don't want to rent the unit. And I'm simply saying that's not what Congress.
On 849, the same policy statement says that in order to opt out, the owners must certify they agree to honor the tenant's right to remain in the property and say, I also agree not to terminate the tenancy of a tenant who exercises their right to remain except for cause under state or local law. That means not to terminate the tenancy. That means they remain a tenant until state or local law says otherwise.
And we gave the notice to discontinue housing.
Well, you did, but the Superior Court doesn't think you gave the right notice.
It's on appeal right now.
Fine. For purposes of today and during all this period, we're stuck with the decision of the Superior Court. You gave the wrong notice, so the tenancy has not yet ended.
Right, but the problem, Your Honor, is under D.C. law, we're locked into a perpetual tenancy.
I can't do anything about D.C. law. All I can do something about is the federal.
Well, you can interpret federal law, so that D.C. law doesn't undercut the intent of what.
Incorporates it. I mean, these guidelines say make it subject to your right to evict for cause under federal, state, or local law. Right. I mean, that they incorporate the limitations of local law.
But facially, I agree. But in implementation, it creates a perpetual lease. It means this landlord can never get out because they're required to sign a one-year lease. If all the appeals were over in this case,
isn't that something you should take to the D.C. Council, perhaps, and not us? You don't like the D.C. law.
It's not that I don't like the D.C. law. It's the way the federal law is being manipulated.
Well, then the problem is apparently there's some dispute about whether you actually have to sign a one-year lease.
Well, I think the record was pretty clear below. District testified that you have to sign a one-year lease.
District testified.
That's
so
right.
So isn't your problem with that requirement, not with the requirement that we're here about, but about whether the lease has to be 1 year?
I don't think I would be here and be as concerned as I am if we could have gone on a month-to-month until the notice of discontinuance issue was resolved. But the problem is we're not.
The D.C. witness said 6 months was acceptable. Right. And
right. They had never done 6 months.
No, but they said that was acceptable.
Right.
And thereafter, month to month.
Right. But they never offered us a 6 month lease.
We're here. This is a lot longer than a year at this point.
Yes.
So I guess I don't get the point. I mean, you must have known that the litigation is going to last more than a year.
Right.
So
my client has no choice. They want to get out of the rental housing business, and they're being forced to stay in it. That's the position they're in. If they are successful here, that offering for rent means I'm holding it out to the public. I want to rent it to somebody. Then they have to take the voucher. If the phrase offering for rent doesn't mean that, they don't have to take the voucher. They're not discriminating against anybody. They're simply...
Well, I think what the District of Columbia says is if you meet the requirements under the District of Columbia law to get out, you can get out. And the federal law says, yeah, that's it. You're stuck with the local law.
And I guess my position here is the federal law has to be looked at objectively, not taking into account what the District of Columbia issue is. Sole thing we want from this court is offering for rent means something other than there's a tenant in the space at the time you seek to terminate your use as rental housing. That's the sole issue, and I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Greenberg.
May it please the court. The federal law at issue in this case creates for tenants a right to remain in their homes when the landlord terminates its subsidy contract with HUD for the housing project. That right to remain lasts until and unless there is cause for eviction under state and local law. In the District of Columbia, an owner's plan to sell the rental property is not a basis for terminating existing tenancies. Applying this rule, the district court correctly held that the tenants have the right to continue living in their Bates Street townhomes and to use their enhanced vouchers to meet their rental obligations for the premises. BSA refused to accept those voucher payments and instead demanded that the tenants pay rent from their own funds. That conduct violated both the federal enhanced voucher statute and the DC Human Rights Act.
Leaving aside this question for a minute, how do you answer his argument that this ends up being perpetual, that they can never get out?
Your Honor, that is incorrect as both a matter of federal and D.C. law. BSA is free to leave the rental housing market at any time. Number one, contrary to BSA's argument, it's free to sell these units anytime it wants. It could sell these units to a third-party investor like TMS, which was the buyer that had the contract in 2005. It could sell them
subject to
the existing leases, that's correct. It could sell them because these are townhomes. It could sell the townhomes to individual owner-occupiers who want to move in and occupy the units personally. At that point, that would be a ground to remove the tenants from the premises under D.C. law. Or it could sell them to the tenants, which it's offered to do, and in fact, four of the tenants did buy their units pursuant
to this. And can it also evict them in order to renovate the place for purposes of selling to individuals or for any other purpose?
Your Honor, under D.C. law, the owner can evict tenants for purposes of renovation. There's actually two provisions of the Rental Housing Act that address that. Both of those provisions give the tenant the right to re-rent after the renovation. Uh-huh. That's correct.
What if they were renovating it for the purpose of selling it to individuals?
That is not a purpose that's recognized under D.C. law, because D.C. law protects tenants after sale of a property and says that they have the right to continue renting sale.
I thought you said that one acceptable reason is if you sell it to individuals, if you sell a unit to individuals. So if you renovate and then offer for sale to individuals, you don't have to keep renting then.
If it's offered for sale to an individual, that's correct, then the individual could serve a notice to vacate to the tenant and the tenancy would end.
Not until the individual buys it?
The individual has to have a contract for sale under D.C. law. D.C. law provides that a notice to vacate can be issued by the landlord if it has a contract for sale for someone who intends to personally occupy the unit. As Your Honor noted in colloquy earlier, these are all questions of D.C. law, and these are questions for the D.C. courts to resolve. What the federal law says is that the tenants have a right to continue renting the premises until those questions are resolved by the state courts. And at this point, those questions have in fact been resolved by the state courts in the tenants' favor. They continue on a month-to-month lease until there is grounds to evict them under local law. The question at issue, both under the federal and the state claim, is what happens to the tenants during the time that they undisputably have a right to remain in place? And in particular, how are they going to be permitted to meet their rental obligations? BSA does not dispute that it's charging rent to the tenants. It wants that money, not simply at the lower voucher rate, but at the full market rate. The tenants want to pay that rent using their enhanced vouchers. BSA has refused to permit it to do so. It said, in effect, we're happy to take money from your pockets, but we're not entering into any contracts and we're not taking any money from the Section 8 voucher program.
Can I ask you about your Human Rights Act claim? Did you make your facial discrimination argument at the district court?
We did, Your Honor. We argued in the district court, as we argued here, that the landlord's decision to take rent and demand rent from the tenants personally but refuse it from the voucher program is a per se violation of the D.C. Human Rights Act. There's been no alteration, as BSA claims, in our argument here. The reason it's a violation of the D.C. Human Rights Act is because the Human Rights Act prevents a landlord from taking adverse action against a tenant based on that tenant's source of income. The adverse action at issue here, and I think this is the source of some of the confusion, both in Judge Walton's opinion and in BSA's briefs here, the adverse action is not BSA's desire to evict the tenants. The adverse action is its refusal of rent payments while the tenants remained in place. And that is a refusal that has real adverse consequences to the tenants in this case. BSA notes its stipulation that it wasn't going to seek to evict the tenants based on non-payment of rent. Leaving aside that stipulation was only good as long as this litigation lasts, there are other consequences to the tenants other than eviction based on BSA's refusal to take their voucher payments. Number one, 2 months after BSA entered into that stipulation, it demanded rent from the four tenants who were attempting to purchase their properties from BSA pursuant to the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act. On the eve of closing in July of 2005, BSA informed the tenants that it was not going to go forward with the closing on the property unless the tenants proffered some $36,000 in unpaid rent for the premises that had accrued between September 2004, at the end of the project-based contract, and July 2005, the date of the closing. That was rent that would have been paid by the voucher program had BSA been willing to accept the tenants' vouchers. In addition, some of the tenants, in fact, paid the market rent when demanded to do so by BSA in the fall of 2004. That's money that they did not have to pay and are entitled to recover back under the D.C. Human Rights Act. Number three, the tenants, during this whole time, because nobody has been paying the voucher payments, have been accruing a running debt to BSA. That's a debt that risks damaging, even if they're not evicted based on it, it's a debt that risks damaging their credit.
Is what? Say that again.
That since September 2004, when HUD stopped paying the project-based subsidy, the tenants who have not been paying rent out of their own funds have been accruing a running debt to BSA. Every month, a rent debit is placed on their tenant ledger, and if they don't fail to pay it, then the balance simply accrues. That is a debt that risks harming their credit histories, and it will risk harming them if they ultimately do seek to look for other housing. They're going to be damaged when the new landlord's informed that they owe thousands and thousands of dollars to BSA, thousands of dollars that would have been covered by the voucher program if, in fact, BSA had been willing to accept the vouchers. BSA's sole...
Well, what happens if you prevail in this litigation?
If we prevail in this litigation on either the federal or the state claim, then BSA will be required to accept the vouchers from the four individuals who remain there as renters. And the case will be remanded to the district court for a trial.
Those vouchers, what, in payment of the past due rent?
No, Your Honor, that would be in payment of the ongoing rental obligation so long as the tenants continue in place.
Okay.
The past due rent, if it comes up, will be a subject for future litigation. We certainly hope that it doesn't. Our position.
Well, I assume some you might get as equitable relief under the Human Rights Law Declaration that since they wouldn't take the money, it's too late and they get nothing.
That would certainly be our position.
I'm not saying you do get that, but that, I mean, the court has the authority to give equitable relief, and that might be the relief.
Yes, Your Honor, and that would be equitable in this circumstance, since the tenants have always been willing to do what needs to be done to enable BSA to accept voucher payments. BSA has simply refused to do so. BSA's sole justification for refusing to accept the vouchers, and this is its defense under both the federal and the local law, is that a one-year lease is required by the housing authority to enter into a voucher contract. There is no basis for that claim, either in the law or in the facts of this case. And even if that were the case, the tenants have stipulated that in this case they will not use BSA's entry into a voucher lease of any term, 1 year or otherwise, as a waiver of any right BSA might actually have under D.C. law to evict them.
What's your argument that it's not, that the one-year lease is not required?
Under the law, Your Honor, the regulation that BSA cites says that a one-year lease ordinarily is required, but that a public housing authority may use a shorter lease if appropriate to expand the tenant's housing opportunities and if it's the market in the jurisdiction. In this case,
is the idea that 1 year is ordinarily required for an initial lease, or is that ordinarily required for each re-extension of the lease?
It's ordinarily required for an initial lease, and then after the initial lease term, and this is both the law and the testimony of the D.C. Housing Authority's representative, after the initial lease term, whether it be 1 year or otherwise, the lease continues on a month-to-month basis until there's grounds for termination. And that...
They already have an initial lease.
What happened to their initial lease?
They have an initial lease that is in place now, and for that reason, the Housing Authority actually indicated in its testimony that nobody would need to enter into any new lease.
I didn't see that. Where's that in the testimony?
That is, for its indulgence.
What I took away from that was that they might be able to enter as little as a six-month lease.
What they would be able to enter is a six-month ratification of the existing lease.
All right, where do you have this?
That is in the deposition testimony.
Maybe 809?
Yes, 809, and I believe that's page 99 of the deposition transcript.
We will accept it. Once we go under a HAP contract, a ratification of that lease with the effective date, it can be shorter than a year so long as the market dictates that leases are entered into shorter than a year. But a ratification to the new effective date of the lease has to match the HAP contract.
I'm sorry, 809
and then lower left quadrant. So maybe you can explain this better, but it seemed to me what that meant was that they had to enter into a new lease of at least 6 months' duration.
No, Your Honor. I believe what that means is that the parties can enter into a ratification of the existing lease, so simply a short statement saying that the existing lease continues.
Well, why do they need that if the existing lease had a month-to-month provision?
So I think I understand. The idea is that regardless of what the existing release says, in order to go into this enhanced voucher thing, there has to be, I guess that's what it says, once we go under a HAP contract, ratification. In other words, HUD's not going to go along with paying these things unless there's at least an initial period in which the it's guaranteed that the tenant will be able to stay.
That's correct, and that initial period in this case was said to be 6 months, although the representative also indicated that they hadn't had the opportunity to study whether a shorter lease or a month-to-month term
after
was market.
After that lease is over, it can then go to just month-to-month?
Yes, and the HAP contract goes...
Let's put some dates. Suppose we give you this old lease. Where does it say that after that initial 6 months, it can go to a month-to-month?
That's at 812 of the record, the deposition testimony beginning on page 118 and continuing to 119. The witness says, so that ratification you're speaking of has to be for a period of 6 months. After that, it can be month to month, but that initial lease term from the time we begin to assist a family has to be for at least 6 months.
So what's the difference, if any, between the initial lease term, the 6 months, if at least 6 months, and a ratification of a lease?
The difference between an initial lease and a ratification has to do with whether the parties are going to be required to enter into a new landlord-tenant lease for the premises with possibly new terms, or whether they can use the lease that they entered into at the outset of the tenancy and simply ratify that lease will be good for 6 months more. It's a question of whether a new contract is required.
So then at 809, page 99, The second answer there seems to require a ratification.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
But then at 118, we always require the owner to have another initial lease term. So that would seem, I don't know, it's very confusing, because he then says, so that ratification you're speaking of has to be for a period of 6 months.
Let me see if I can clarify.
Are these terms interchangeable? And if so, why are there two terms?
Let me see if I can clarify. I think there's two different ideas here. One is the piece of paper that's going to be signed, whether it be a new lease or a ratification of the existing lease, essentially something saying, we agree the existing lease continues in effect. The second question is the term of that new lease or ratification, whatever it is. The D.C. Housing Authority's position, as articulated in their deposition testimony, is that there's no new contract required, merely a ratification of the existing contract, but that that ratification had to be for a term of at least 6 months. We agree that this lease will be in effect for 6 months going forward. After those 6 months are up, the lease and the HAP contract, which is the voucher contract along with it, continue on a month-to-month basis, terminable at any time, either by the tenant or for cause under state and local law. The HAP contract, the voucher contract that BSA is resisting entering into, is coterminous with the lease. It's essentially subordinate to the lease. And if the lease terminates for cause under state and local law, the voucher contract terminates along with it. So there's simply no basis for BSA's claim that by entering into a voucher contract, in this case, they're required to be a landlord in perpetuity. Nothing requires that either in the federal voucher law or the D.C. Rental Housing Act.
Other questions? Judge Greenberg? No, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Greenberg, do you want a minute?
Very quickly, Your Honor, the A809 refers to what happens when there's a HAP contract. Ms. Becker said, I think, the most telling thing during her argument. She said, you can't sell without a buyer. You can't renovate until you've sold it. That prevents BSA from leaving the market, because if they can't find somebody who wants to occupy it, they have to renovate it to attract somebody to buy it.
This is imagine you had none of the current people in the place could qualify anymore for these requirements. But they were there. Let's say suddenly they started making a lot of money, and therefore they were no longer means tested for this. You still have D.C. law, which does exactly what your complaint seems to be with D.C. law, which may be too restrictive of landlords or may not be too restrictive of landlords. But you knew it when the building was built and started renting to renters. That's the cost of renting in the District of Columbia.
I'll deal with the D.C. law with D.C., but I've still got the voucher problem. What they're saying is I've got this discrimination claim against me.
I'm holding off just for a moment on the discrimination claim. You say you're stuck in perpetuity. If you are, that's because of D.C. law, not because of this voucher problem.
No, it's a combination of both, because if I have to take the voucher, I have to sign the six-month lease.
But in any event, under D.C. law, you have to, when the lease runs out, you have to allow month-to-month terminable only for cause under D.C. law. That's D.C. law.
But what Ms. Becker didn't tell you, Judge Garland, was every time the tenant comes back in to requalify, I've got to sign a new lease with them.
Okay. I'm just saying, I understand that point, but your overall point, which is you're stuck with the tenants until you have cause under D.C. law, you're stuck with that's regardless of whether there's a voucher or not, right?
I agree with that.
Okay.
I am stuck. I have to deal with D.C. law. If your question to me is, do I have to deal with D.C. law at some point, the answer is yes.
Well, my question to you is a little one step further, which is the basic sort of, in a way it's not a legal issue, but a policy issue you're talking about here, which is that you believe you're stuck in perpetuity.
Right.
That is really not a consequence. If it's a consequence at all, it's not a consequence of the voucher program.
No, but the voucher program gives the tenants the ability to game the D.C. system. Because if I didn't have to take the vouchers, then when I send my discontinuous notice and it runs out, I won't have to deal with the voucher issue. But if I've got this six-month lease that I've signed, my discontinuous notice runs out.
You still have a month-to-month problem.
No, I don't. I have a six-month-to-a-year problem. Never offered six-month leases.
No, no.
Never.
Imagine that that the federal law doesn't require you to accept the vouchers.
Okay.
Imagine it provides vouchers, but it doesn't require.
Still have a D.C. problem.
You still can't get rid of the tenants. Still, even at the end of your lease, have a month-to-month right. Right.
I agree.
Okay.
I admit that.
So, and that's in perpetuity unless you have a cause. Now, I guess one possible cause is that they don't pay. And so if the voucher doesn't apply, they can't pay.
Right.
Then you get another D.C. law. Then you get the Human Rights Act.
Right.
So this really, the policy problem you have strikes me as a problem with D.C., not a problem with anything we would do on the federal level.
I respectfully disagree with that.
Tell me why.
Because as a matter of federal law, I should have the right to withdraw from the Section 8 program and discontinue my housing use. That's the issue.
But it's the discontinue part that is D.C. prevents you from doing.
But what Judge Walton relied on was the offering for sale, offering for rent. We clarify offering for rent, then I've got a different way to approach it. If he says because there's an incumbent tenant I'm offering it, I have nowhere to go. But if offering for rent means something other than there's somebody in the space, then it's meaningful both for D.C. and for the federal. And the last thing I'd like to say on the facial claim, I would ask the court to look at the second amended complaint at page A316. There is no facial complaint. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greenberg. Ms. Becker, thank you. The case is submitted.